Chapter 76. Darrow. By the Laws of the Ice. The throng gathering in the wake of my hunt grows island by island. Thousands trail us now. On and on I chase far over the archipelagos until we reach the island of Hades, a rocky home to the feast for the braves farthest from Far's favour. I chase him through groves of wild fig trees bent inland by the wind. To my left and right, Sevro and Cassius shatter gnarled boughs laden heavily with swollen fruit. Pulp and splinters smear our armour until the grove gives way to slate rock formations covered with orange moss. Far winds through them and emerges on a headland where hot, bubbling well springs belch steam. He sits down there at the terminus of a spring. There is nowhere left to run. The sea is all that lies ahead. He looks out at it as Sevro and Cassius find perches on the rock behind me. Far's tattered armour rises and falls with his breath. Blood weeps from the many punctures and gashes. It stains the blue paint his shaman applied to his armour and trickles into a puddle around his boots. His warsaw is now a millstone too heavy to even lift.
"I've called Diomedes. He's leaving Athena the battle. He's on his way," Cassius says. Clang, clang, clang.
Far flinches at the sound, as if he had forgotten I was there. Slowly, he turns. The spirit is gone from the doom-struck man.
"What do you want from me?"
he asks. His voice warbles.
"Why won't you just leave me alone? What do you want?"
Our audience has not caught up, but the wind carries their demand. Clang, clang, clang.
"I have helium, weapons, ships."
His voice warbles again. Sparks spurt from his metal throat. He digs at something there with his sharp fingers and discards it.
"Hundreds of thousands of low-colors, Darrow."
His voice no longer carries the same baritone as Ragnar's. It is softer, more intelligent, and more afraid.
"A million innocents on Askamani ships. In the Garter, more. I will free them. I will give you back your precious Valk-killing machine. Take them, good riddance. I will leave Europa."
He waits for me to reply. I don't.
"Tell me what you want."
Again, the wind makes its demand. Clang, clang, clang. His eyes creep up. I turn to see the island's braves gathering on the cliffs. The laughter drifts in the wind as the throng in the air arrives, banging their axes on their boots or their skiffs. Hundreds, thousands.
"Volga spotted, and Lyria, 3 o'clock, Cassius says. Diomedes, 30 seconds.
Volga curves around a giant slate of rock with the mad little red riding on her back. As the two set down, I look back to Far. Clang, clang, clang.
"Then you will let me leave," he asks.
I see him clearly now. Beneath the mountain of the man lies a venal, quaking spirit. A greedy little man. Or am I choosing to see him as small, to ease the dread in knowing there are servants of the enemy with the sort of conviction his mission would take? I doubt it is his fault that Atlas made Far his tool. Far went along with the worlds, as do most of us. Had he been born one generation later, who knows what side he'd be on? Diomedes coasts in, low to the water. He hesitates when he sees the audience I've gathered behind me, but settles down beside Cassius to watch.
"Answer me, Darrow. If I confess, will you let me leave?"
Far asks.
"I give you my word. Confess your crimes and I will not kill you."
The obsidians watch in silence. A silence made all the deeper when several hundred Askamani arrive. The wind whooshes against their strange armor. The sea sighs. Far looks down at the blood around his feet. It has started to draw crabs from the tide pools of the headland.
Fine. Fine. Atlas is my master, he says. Are you satisfied?
Clang, 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 from the Valk above.
Shut up,
he shouts like a man pestered by wasps.
I was born Vagnar Hefka of the Valkyrie Spires, as I claim, to the Jens Grimmis stables. I was a slave knight and rewarded. I enjoyed the life of a gladiator and all its attendant spoils. It came with a price and expiration date. I died. Then I began my second service. I served in Kaor Nihil, under the greatest mind of his generation, Atlas Aura, a man who knows duty, as do none of you. I was banished along with him to exterminate the Askamani vermin. We tried for years. After Luna fell, Atlas raised me amongst the Askamani to unite them, to use against the Dominion and the Rising, to remind the traitors that beyond the society lies only the abyss, only chaos, and to give the Rim a savior from the core, I say. Yes, he says, Atalantia. My reign was to last 3 years. Then Atalantia would sail to bring order to these spheres. Without order, chaos rushes in. Kill me. Find out.
He grins at the Valk and the Askamani.
They will eat each other unless you claim the throne, Tir Morga. Unless you prove me right, you came to get your axe back. Go on, Gold. They were designed to be used, and Ouroboros. Unless you feed them enemies, they are a serpent eating their own tail.
He chuckles and spits blood.
Where is Atlas? I ask.
He grunts.
You asked me to confess, not give up my brother. Atlas thinks of you as a loyal dog at best. Where is he?
You do not know him. That is why you cannot fight him.
Where is he? But he knows you. He knows all of you.
Where? I shout.
He does not reply. His eyes change, like he knows now whatever vision he had of his future is no longer in reach. He says farewell to it with a heavy sigh and a small smile. He lets go of his war saw. It clangs against the ground.
Where is Atlas? He asks,
and pats his chest over his heart.
Here. There.
He nods to me, then up at the audience.
In all our hearts. He may be mortal, but his work is not. My Gorgon brothers you butchered were patriots, Darrow. Their sacrifice will live on in the works of our brother, our teacher, our all-father. Before only him I kneel.
He closes his eyes and goes to his knees. He no longer speaks to me.
Without darkness there could not be light. Forgive me, brother, for seeking a little more for myself before the end.
He unfastens his armor. His huge body is rent and dark with blood. The armor clangs to the ground a piece at a time. From the smile on his face, I know he's sown poison in his truths.
Did you kill the Ra in their family vestibule?
Diomedes asks.
The children! Was it you?
Cassius stays Diomedes with a hand on his chest. We had agreed beforehand. Far is the Valk's to kill. Far does not answer, anyway. Diomedes relents and Cassius throws me the heat-seeker gauntlet he carried from the Isle of Zeus. It is heavy with sharp fingers. I walk toward Far and see Skard floating above, surrounded by Jarls, no doubt already spreading dissent against my pending reign.
"You saw how he used my boy, my Sigurd," he will say. "You saw how he let him die. He wants the throne. I told you," Far calls. "Did I kill your son, Darrow? Skard, should not you deliver the blow? Avenge Sigurd?"
The Volkhand that kills a king or queen takes the crown. That is often the Obsidian's way. If I take Far's life, I am king. If Skardr takes it, then he is. Both are a problem. Skardr will not cross me. Not today. None will. If I kill Far, the Obsidians will cheer. They will kneel. They will hail me as king. They will follow me to Mars and be my axe. But their actions speak for the thoughts they will not voice. Already some of them are floating to join the orbit of the strongest who are not me. This is the problem. The Obsidians is a cult of silence that follows strength. That silence is called honor, but it is really fear. The seeds of resentment sown here will grow to yield more destruction. The Obsidians will rebel again, or, when I die, start the cycle all over. I cannot decide their fate either by sitting on the throne myself or installing a puppet. Yet, if I leave the throne empty, they will destroy each other in their rush to fill it. Nothing will change. So I will try to get them to tread the thin line between chaos and tyranny, that fragile experiment we call democracy. Not now, though. First, Far must die. And then I must give my candidate a chance.
"I'm not going to kill you," I say to Far. "That's up to her."
I look over at Volga and motion her to join me. The Volkjarls roar in protest, especially Skardr. I raise my blade for silence and call out,
"A servant of the Fear Knight cannot be king of the Volk, can he?"
They quiet. They see what I'm doing. If Far is not really their king, I am declaring his murder will not serve as a coronation for their new monarch.
"No, he cannot,"
Skardr says, sly, sacrificing the day to win tomorrow.
"This man is no king, then. He is just a man, just a father. It is known by the Volk that a father's shame is his family's. So, by the laws of the ice, let blood judge blood," I say.
The Jarls let it pass. I toss the gauntlet to Volga as she approaches. Lyria follows. Volga is shorter than I am, and shy to meet my gaze. Eventually she does, and the shame in her expression is eclipsed only by her anger at Far. She slips on the gauntlet and faces Far. I take Lyria by the shoulder and guide her off to the side. Whatever peace or malice Far had left drains from him as he looks up at Volga.
"If not for the Volk, why did you do this?" she asks him.
"For a brother and my deserved peace," he replies.
"But the passage..."
He seems to shrink a little.
"This farce was not to last. I thought, if you were like me, you could not hate me. You could understand me. You could love..."
He jerks as she plunges the gauntlet into his chest, up to the wrist, and gives a twist. Their faces draw close together. For the first time, I see his features in hers, hers in him, and Ragnar's in both. Then Volga pulls out Far's heart and holds it up before his eyes.
"Unworthy!"
She throws it over her shoulder, and soon after, he teeters down to the ground to the delight of the crabs. Silence presides, but for the sounds of the dwindling battle beneath the Pandora in the distance. No obsidians cheer, because for the first time in years, they have no ruler. Seeing the chaos coming and the factions already forming, the Askamani look one last time at the corpse of the man they thought blessed by God and slip away into the dark. I motion to Severo. He jogs over with his helmet off to become the scariest town crier the worlds have ever seen.
Hello! Sorry!
He steps up onto Far's corpse.
That's better. Can you hear me now?
Good.
Great to be back. Lots of favourite faces here. We've shared a lot of good times. And now, a few bad ones. Let's not make it worse. You know it could get really shitty really fast. You know what you're like. Come on, you do.
The Jarls all look at those with whom they have a grudge. For a moment, no one is looking at Severo except Volga.
So, with your consent, we will be your mediators in this transition period. 24 hours from now, you will meet on this island, further from my stepstool's favour, where you will vote on your new monarch. Each Jarl will have 2 votes. 2. One for themselves, 1 decided by their braves. The braves cannot, I repeat, cannot vote for their own Jarl. Recall your men. Bring your ships above these islands. If anyone leaves without a howler escort, if anyone steals, if anyone kills, if anyone cheats, if anyone intimidates, they break Tir Morgul's peace and will earn his Ashvar.
He gestures to me like I'm a show pony.
As you have seen, he's gotten a lot scarier since you last saw him. But he will not be your king. He is not on the ballot and will not interfere.
Diomedes looks my way.
If you do not like these rules, let's have it now.
I walk to a flat spot and draw both of my blades and wait in the silence.
Good, Severo calls after half a minute passes. Now sober up, wash your beards, you've campaigning to do. If you have any questions, I'm going to be on my wife's ship testing out my new knives.
He takes off. I offer Lyria a lift, but she turns me down. I follow Severo into the air. We land a few minutes later in the hangar of the Pandora that Athena and Diomedes secured. Diomedes and Cassius land behind me. Gunfire rattles from deeper in the ship.
Askamani are dug in throughout the ship, one of the Calabar Gold Knights reports to Diomedes. Resistance is stiff.
Severo gasps at the arcane symbols and religious totems erected by the Askamani in the hangar.
Jove's putrid cock! This place is filthy. Oh, now you care about a ship being clean, Cassius says. That's rich.
Athena rushes over from tending the wounded.
Is it done? She asks.
Far is dead, but the menace remains, Diomedes says. Darrow has seen fit to experiment with democracy for his obsidians at the expense of our people.
Athena is torn at hearing that.
We agreed you'd get them off Europa, Darrow.
I will. And I'm trying to make sure they don't nuke the place as they go or steal millions of your citizens, I reply, more than a little peeved by their pedantry.
Diomedes gets very close to my face.
We agreed. They would surrender all the people they have enslaved, all the loot they have taken, and leave. Now you will have chaos. Now the Askamani will flee and infest the Garter. You have put everything at stake.
I take a deep breath. They already infest the Garter. Do you have an army to cleanse that infestation? Do you have an army to smash the Volk?
No,
So your only hope is that that Volk army out there chooses to shine the better angels of their nature. Your only hope, Diomedes, is that they help you. So please, get out of my face!
He is furious and whips around when Severo clears his throat. Severo and Cassius have their weapons out.
Victor's employees are in slavery on this ship and have been for a year. My employees, Severo says, and takes the twilight helm from, of all people, Chion.
4 dozen black owls await his order.
So, we gonna whine, or we gonna go sweep your halls? Cassius drawls. Waiting on you, Ares.
Idiot, Severo mutters, puts on the helm, and runs toward the gunfire with Cassius at his flank. Diomedes and I exchange another glare and follow with the black owls. We can argue later. For now, there's killing to be done.